Welcome to Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Moran, Editorial Director of Fixed Income News Australia. Join me every week as I talk about the latest news, views and education in fixed income investment. I'll be joined by industry experts from Australia and across the globe.
Welcome everybody to our latest podcast. My name is Ben Reedy and I'm the co-founder of Fixed Income News Australia. I'm stepping in today for my fellow founder, Liz Moran, who is enjoying a well-earned break. We're joined today by Anthony Kirkham, who is Head of Investment Management and Australian Operations for Fixed Income Manager at Western Asset Management. Welcome, Anthony.
Thanks, Ben, for having me.
Just by way of a short introduction, Western Asset is a global fixed income investment manager with about $375 billion US dollars under management. These days, Western Asset is part of Franklin Templeton's suite of specialist managers. In Australia, the company manages the Beta Shares Western Asset Australian Bond Fund ETF, which you can find under the ASX code BNDS. The company also manages a range of open-ended funds, including the $1.4 billion Western Asset Australian Bond Fund. Anthony has been the lead portfolio manager for this fund for more than 20 years. Anthony has been a strong advocate for the fixed income asset class for nearly 30 years and has headed up Western Assets Australian business for 15 years. Anthony, you've been in fixed income for nearly three decades now. How does 2022 compare to previous years?
Yes, Ben, it's been certainly quite a shock. I think for my history within markets, 1994 has always been the one we've compared to for being the worst, and 2022 has certainly surpassed that. So certainly a shock from my perspective, and clearly a shock for investors. No one would have expected that type of return over a 12-month period. But at the same time, we've never had the sorts of, extraordinary events that we've had for the past, really 15 years with that manipulation that's gone on within bond markets. So, yeah, at some point, I guess it had to break, and 2022 has certainly been the year.
Obviously, the story this year has been all about central banks tightening interest rates to try and get a hold on inflation. Is that the sort of the core of the volatility? People really weren't expecting this sort of inflation breakout and weren't expecting such an aggressive response from central banks. Is that the basic summation of what's happened?
Yes, Ben, that definitely the major driver. And I think, we haven't been in this position for a long period of time. As I said before, really central banks have spent pretty much the last certainly 14 years manipulating yields lower post-GFC in some parts of the world. And so therefore, it has been an incredible change to have what was easy monetary policy, obviously turning quickly to a tightening policy stance by central banks in order to anchor down inflation expectations and obviously get more stable pricing. So that's their biggest challenge at this point. And they're going to use monetary policy clearly to do so, which means tightening the cost of and increasing the cost of funding to obviously reduce activity levels. And, that's a big challenge for the economy where it's at.
Yeah, and obviously it came as quite a surprise too. I don't think anybody sort of predicted we would see such higher levels of inflation and such aggressive action by the Reserve Bank. So there's virtually nobody who really predicted this was going to be the result of everyone coming out of COVID, did they?
No, that's right. I mean, it's certainly, as I said, been an extraordinary period because not only did you have that incredible easy monetary policy during the pandemic, and we saw that most definitely here in Australia. Never have we seen a cash rate at 10 basis points, nor have we seen the RBA lending to banks for three-year terms at 10 basis points. So all that, obviously very cheap funding, clearly led to a lot of borrowing, and that has meant a big change in terms of the impact as you've tightened monetary policy and the impact in terms of mortgage payments for consumers ultimately.
Yeah. And as we look forward, what sort of indicators are you looking at with more interest in the market at the moment to sort of get a better understanding of, we all know what's happened in 2022, but everyone wants more interest in what's going to happen in 2023. So what indicators are you looking at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think it's been interesting because, we've seen a number of central banks clearly tighten monetary policy aggressively, and the RBA is certainly one of those. It's been a really solid move from where we were, back in May to where the cash rate is now. And I think it's been interesting to see, obviously, the RBA, take stock of that and what we're calling pivot at this point to something more normal with regards to tightening monetary policy away from that 50 basis point tightening that they went on initially. And so in many ways, we've seen that occur across most central banks where they've taken stock. The only one that hasn't at this point, of course, is the Fed. And so I guess in many ways, you're looking at, you know, what's going on in the US economy as a guide to, you know, when they will actually pivot as well. And so therefore, CPI data there, certainly wages data there is a real key focus for markets. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked on the side of markets yet. But, you know, look, ultimately, and importantly, central banks will win this fight with regards to inflation. And therefore, it's important to understand where they're going from here. I guess locally, you know, there's a couple of things we're looking at, and they're generally forward-looking activity data is the key. And we're seeing that coming through in terms of things like ANZ job ads or SEEK job ads, just giving us the insight in terms of the tightness of labor. And we are seeing that starting to adjust a little. So certainly that's key. And then spending behavior also. Central banks want to see the consumer spending less. They want to see activity falling away to give a guide to when inflation will start to turn. And those things are certainly showing signs of rolling over.
Yeah. Does Western Asset have a house view about when interest rates might top out here in Australia and in the US?
Yeah, well, certainly Australia's probably a little clearer at this point, as I said, because we have got a central bank that feels like they're getting closer to that. I think you're looking at, you know, even data yesterday with regards to consumer confidence, business confidence. We haven't seen it worse than this since the pandemic. And it's, in fact, surpassed levels that we saw during the GFC. So those sort of signs are definitely ones that say to us that the consumer is feeling the pain. Of course, they still are spending and possibly will keep spending until the bank account is looking a little sick, or certainly credit cards are pressured. But the point is that, you know, we do feel as though bond yields have priced in a lot where they currently are. And therefore, we feel that, you know, we've probably seen the peaks in terms of yields. And so the opportunity set is certainly evident here within fixed income at this point in time.
So, and moving out a little bit from an investor focus, what sort of role does fixed income play in these periods of volatility, and what sort of role do you think it will play over the next 12 months as things hopefully return to a more normal state?
Yeah, I think that's important, and recognizing that, you know, we have seen a significant change within the bond market, and clearly the bond funds and our conservative Australian bond fund is certainly a good example of that, where we've seen, you know, the yield move up from unbelievably 1.1% last August to now being basically 5%. And so therefore, the important thing with that is that, you know, bonds are now closer to fair value, and some would even argue that they're looking a little on the cheap side, because you obviously got that protection now within fixed income, in that, you know, if things do get worse from here from an economic standpoint, then you're likely to see bond yields moving lower. And so that's when obviously works, you know, opposite to risky assets like equities, that under an environment of a slowing economy, you're going to see their prices moving lower. But from a bond standpoint, you're going to see clearly bond prices moving higher on that basis, and therefore giving you, offsetting return to where risk markets may be heading. And that we haven't been able to do that clearly when bond yields have been manipulated down to super low levels, whereas at 5%, you know, clearly it has somewhere to go, and therefore provide that defense that you need within your broad portfolio.
Moving on to portfolio issues now, you know, should people be looking at their portfolio now in terms of what's happened over the last 12 months in terms of equities and fixed income and all the different asset classes? Is now a sort of a time when people should start having a good look at, you know, what's going to happen in 2023 and where they ramp up and where they ramp down?
Yeah, most certainly. And I think, you know, when you think about history, we haven't really been in this position for some time. You know, you've seen markets being supported by these easy monetary policy stances, whereas clearly now it's not. You know, central banks fighting inflation, so interest rates are up, and therefore does provide a real opportunity for investors to pivot into bonds, because they can provide not only that offsetting benefit during times of stress, but they actually now do provide a real yield that's attractive. It gives you a place to hide. Earning something close to 5% is very attractive. And of course, if bond yields and the yield curve does move lower, then clearly you can start to get even greater returns out of fixed income during those times. So it moves down by, you know, 0.5% with a duration of 5 years, then clearly you're looking at something greater than 7%, and down by 1%, then greater than 10%. It really is a fantastic place, as I say, to go to for that ballast. And at this point in time, duration is actually your friend.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been, you know, the last 10 years for fixed income investing have been really tough to generate those returns, haven't they? And there is a, as those, the yields have increased towards that 5, 6% in some cases, there is more opportunity, isn't there? It becomes much more of a, it's going to play a much greater role in portfolios as opposed to just, you know, putting 5 or 10% into a portfolio and set and forget sort of thing. Now you can play a little bit of, you know, play the market a little bit, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what this volatility has also presented is certainly greater opportunities within the asset class, because you have seen some stress in it as a result of, I guess, technical factors, where you've had, you know, large investors like the Japanese insurers that had products here in Australia, or at least had products in Japan, using Australian assets that they needed to exit out of, because they had special triggers in them, which actually were triggered when the yen weakened. And so we saw some large outflows in March and April, sending spreads wider, you know, making corporates and certainly SSAs, the supranational sovereigns agencies, looking much more attractive. And yet fundamentals are still really sound within those particular sectors. So yeah, it definitely has presented great opportunities for investors. And you look at maybe even the air services deal yesterday, rated AAA, obviously government-owned business, you know, you're picking up, you know, in a six-year bond, something like 5.5%, in a 10-year bond, 6%, like 200 basis points nearly over a government bond for what is a government asset. It's, you know, it is certainly an unusual times, but for investors, really fantastic time to get involved.
And for those people who do want to get involved, what's sort of some of the easy ways they can do it? You've obviously got the BNDS, the ETF there, which is a relatively straightforward way to get in it. Then you've got the different fixed income strategies. What's sort of your recommendation for how people can sort of, if they haven't dipped their toe into it, how they dip their toe into fixed income?
Yeah, as I said, it's very easy. And of course, buying a bond fund, I think, is the cleanest way to get involved, because you are getting that diversity. You obviously got something that's very active in this case, those options, which I think is really key within fixed income, because if you look at the benchmarks, of course, benchmarks are made up by outstanding. So the bigger issuer, in this case, in Australia, government, makes up a much larger part of the benchmark, and you don't need to hold, you know, that sort of exposure to provide the ballast that you're looking for within fixed income. So an active management type fund that, you know, we offer clearly provides both that diversification, the active management, which I think will be certainly key, particularly during times of volatility, because we can actually move the fund around to capture the opportunity set that certainly presents currently.
Just give us a bit of insight into the mind of a portfolio manager, and that particularly an active portfolio manager. What are you looking at sort of on a day-to-day basis in terms of where you put funds, where you remove funds from? How does that process work in your head?
Yeah, I mean, for us, because of the type of funds that we're talking about here, we obviously want to ensure that the fund is going to provide that defense. So you always want to make sure that you've got enough, I guess, high quality assets within it. And we think that, you know, by doing that, and by holding governments at the back end of the yield curve, you can get that hard duration that will obviously work if we do run into a period of a slowdown, which we believe is very, very likely based on, you know, where the globe's at and what's happening in terms of central banks. But then you can also get involved with the corporate bond market, or certainly the SSA market, both, you know, very much high grade and investment grade, importantly, that will provide that extra income, but at the same time behave the way you want it to in some sort of slowdown, which we think is very, very likely based on what the central banks are currently doing.
Yeah. So what are some of the, there's a question without notice, but what are some of the bonds BNDES is putting into at the moment? What are some of the individual bonds you're looking at the moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, BNDES is, obviously a fund that can, and the size has grown so that it can get the diversity you're looking for, and clearly you can get involved with, you know, what we see these corporate bond market in Australia, which is generally speaking made up of high-grade companies, monopolistic, duopolistic in nature. So you think about things like Coles and Woolworths and Wesfarmers, Telstra, you know, those types of issuers. We obviously have a lot of the major banks issuing here. So there you'll find those names certainly within BNDES, but also capturing certainly the REIT market. So real estate investment trusts, which we think still remain incredibly defensive in nature. Leverage is certainly low versus the sector globally. And, you know, they're in assets that very difficult to replicate. So they provide opportunities. And then I think, you know, the Australian market also has a lot of regulated assets. So you think about, you know, ports, airports, electrical lines, you know, these things that are actually regulated, therefore can provide defense during inflationary pressure because they can clearly press and push up their prices if need be. But they also, and importantly, often now owned by super funds. So they're long-term holders, which, you know, from an investor's or bond investor's perspective is really important. So you can really get that diversity you're looking for within a bond fund here in Australia, which is great.
And the underlying market is still functioning well despite the volatility. There's still companies issuing debt. There's still company buying back debt. There's still a lot of liquidity in the underlying market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly, you know, during periods of volatility, you're going to have a little less because, you know, participants definitely step back. But, you know, it's very much a well-broke market here in Australia. Lots of banks and brokers involved with it and have the ability to hold, obviously, assets and therefore encourage liquidity. So, yeah, look, we haven't had any problems so far. And that's, I think, you know, considering the market we've had, you know, I think that's a good sign.
Now, just returning back to the investors and how they can invest, explain to us just quickly the difference between investing in a fixed income ETF and one of your funds. What's the fundamental difference between those two?
Well, to be honest, we actually manage the BNDES fund exactly the same way we manage the unlisted fund. So when you're buying it, you're basically getting exactly the same active management that we would have across both. It's really just accessing it, you know, whether you prefer to, you know, go through FT or you actually get it through a broker. You know, that's basically the only difference from an investor's standpoint, which I think is really important.
So still the same underlying assets, still the same underlying strategy for those funds.
Yes, exactly, Ben. Yep.
And again, looking forward to next year, what's sort of some of your bold predictions for next year? What do you think we'll see, you know, on the horizon? Do you think once those interest rates top out, do you think we're going to see a bit of a slowing in the economy?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, as we know, central banks are definitely going to win the fight against inflation because they can clearly continue to tighten monetary policy until they see it occur. And definitely hearing that from the Federal Reserve. I think we know the RBA understands the challenges here in Australia where it's much more direct because obviously you move the cash rate up, mortgage payments typically go with it. We're in a bit of a sweet spot for some borrowers because they did take out some of those special, you know, 2-3 year deals from the banks. And so they've been somewhat protected by interest rate increases till now, but we know they do roll off over the next 6-12 months. And that will certainly be challenging for some because at the moment, if you're expecting cash rate to be around that sort of 3.5 level by next year, then borrowing rates will certainly be, you know, in that, you know, 5-6, possibly even a little bit higher region. So going from a 2% to a 6% will certainly be a big shock to borrowers. And as we know, cost of living has gone up. So it's very clear that disposable income is going to decline, activity will decline as a result, and therefore you will see a slowing in the economy. At this point, the RBA is expecting 2023 to be more like a 1.5% type growth level and similar in 2024, and we don't have a major issue with that. We think there is a risk that we could you know, skirt a recession. It will be more technical in nature because I think the Australian economy is probably better than most. Once again, you know, thanks to our strong exports that will continue to work for us. But the rest of the globe, definitely challenged. Europe obviously challenged as they transition off Russian energy, and also challenged by broad pricing of energy. And Germany is a good example of that, where, you know, it's obviously the manufacturing hub. They're challenged with the increases they've seen in terms of energy costs. Similarly, UK challenged by Brexit anyway, but definitely challenged by energy too. And so both those economies will definitely feel a relatively hard recession as a result. And you got to think that, you know, China clearly is not going to be growing where they were at 7, 8s and 9s. It's more 3, 4s and 5s if they're lucky. And that would certainly challenge global growth as well. So it's very, you know, don't want to be depressive, but it's hard not to see slowing in the global economy. And therefore, you're going to expect bond yields will absolutely start coming down through next year.
And you know, when you start talking about recessions and slowing economies, then you start talking about central banks stimulating economies and lowering interest rates. And
yes,
that might be a discussion we start to have towards the middle of the end of next year, when central banks start to, you know, not just up interest rates, but start bringing them down a little bit to stimulate a bit of activity.
Yes, it's typical for markets. They like to swing from one pillar to post. So I think you're absolutely right. That will be the big discussion as we move into next year.
Do you think we'll ever get back to those sort of ultra low rates, negative rates in some of those countries? Do you think they're on the horizon anytime soon, or do you think they're sort of a vestige of the past now and we'll?
Yeah, I think definitely, and it's the past. I think what Europe found is that, and we saw that during the pandemic, where because they'd already pushed yields into negative territory, which I still can't get my head around and I think is absurd, but they didn't press further during the pandemic because they realized that that is really not great for markets more generally. And so therefore, I doubt it. I think it's interesting what we did here in Australia, and the RBA is now also considering whether some of the tools they used were probably somewhat misused. And so therefore, it's very unlikely we'll see the types of levels we got to. Because the thing is for investors is that you're basically taking away any sort of return for taking, you know, risk-free investments. And when you do that, that pushes them into alternatives, which really may not be the best time for them. So I think they will think twice next time, but, you know, who knows when we get there, whether they'll head down the same track or not. But I doubt that they'll take it to the extremes that they did this time.
Yeah. And obviously, if we start to see those sort of wild movements, increases, you know, through the first half of next year, possibly, you know, falling interest rates towards the second half of next year, obviously what you want is an active manager looking after your fixed income. So thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you for joining us this week on Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and don't forget to join us again next week. Still hungry for more fixed income news, views and education? Then visit fixedincomenews.com.au, and don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter to have the latest news delivered right to your inbox. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Elizabeth Moran, and we'll see you next week on Fixated, the Fixed Income Podcast.